F2. Number 13A.
Are the outward sense of existence, or the lesser sense of existence. He shows that these claims one after the other. He shows how being steadfast in spirit, that will meet the dead letter, that will meet the dead letter, and give to the letter the spirit of it. Study thoroughly the letter and imbibe the spirit. So we can see that we have to go on to the law of spirit so as to give life to the letter, to the true letter, to the divine letter, give life to it, or else it remains a dead letter. He shows that if we have that wonderful, constant, conscious unity with the spiritual, that enables us to triumph over the things which are seen, that the unseen, the material unseen, develops in us and gets the upper hand within us, so that which is seen loses its importance. Then he goes on and says that if we have that spiritual trust and unity with the spiritual nature of being, then that will evolve the inward man in us, and that it will triumph over all the claims within us which are claiming the outward man. So you can see, and even he goes on and shows that the spiritual values just triumph over the material valuation. That's the whole tone of spirit. You can see the triumph of the spiritual over the material within us. And it shows that we can't triumph, that the spiritual within us can never triumph over the material within us unless we have that wonderful conscious unity with all that what spirit means. First, that's the approach to it that opens the door. And if we turn the key, then the door opens and we get the full reward. Then he goes to soul and he shows the same law again in soul. Namely, that our steadfast unity with soul empowers us to triumph over mortality and reconciles us with God. Humanly, most of us may wish that we can triumph over mortality, over sense and sin. But how? If we just try it, it's a hard going. And it's the law of the works. It's the Old Testament. Thou shalt not. But the Christianity sense is that but it says, well, you just fill your consciousness with that wonderful sense that you are one with soul, and with all what soul means, and with all what soul has and is and does. You just fill inwardly your consciousness with all that. Then, if you stay with that, if you are steadfast in that, if you don't give in that vision once one has once won. And so, just if one doesn't see the tatter, but just stays there and has that wonderful perseverance, soul is that which perseveres, you see, then that very attitude has the Christ power in itself to wipe out of our consciousness and out of our experience everything that is sinful, selfish, corporeal. Paul says, we wish not for that we would be unclothed, but clothed upon. You see, we want to have a compensation. It's not enough that we feel, oh, if we only could get rid of the counterfeit sense of soul. She only could get rid of being unbalanced, selfish, egotistic, sensual. If you only could get rid of that sense of being always thinking about the body and corporeality, well, that's a nice wish, but it doesn't do much. It's not enough if that goes, then we would just be blank. It's not enough that error goes. We need a compensation. I always feel that the moment a student sees that he never loses anything by studying science, but always will gain something, then he will put his heart into it. But sometimes Christian Science is just presented in the way that one feels, oh, I lose everything. I'm no more allowed to do this, and no more allowed to do that, and that, and that, and that is wrong, and you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do that, and you have to part with this. It's just taking away. He says, I wish not to be unclothed, but clothed upon, that mortality may be swallowed up in life. What we want to wish is not to lose just something. What the law of Christianity tells us is that we gain everything. And therefore, the Christianity's law always starts first with the filling. We just fill first our thoughts with all what soul is. You see, in Romans, you really do that. In Romans, you just begin first to fill your thought with God, and you say, oh, 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 I partake of the whole of God. I am partaker of the whole nature of God. See, we always have to deal with a situation from the point of grace, from the point of abundance. Never of first fighting an error and then say, if that is dead, then perhaps something positive will be established. No, we start right with the fullness. We always handle every error from the throne of grace, from the throne of abundance of being. And so we are clothed upon, and we are not just stripped naked. There is always a million times more as compensation than what we lose. All we lose is hell, but we like hell, every one of us. We just like hell in all various ways and means. And that's the struggle in Christianity. We wouldn't have any struggle if we wouldn't like to keep hell. If we would 100% just be willing to let hell go, there would be no struggle, there would be no struggle without, no struggle within. That's the point of science. But in our human life, we have to work out, before we come to the standpoint of science, the standpoint of the first side of the Holy City of Christianity. So he desires to be absent from the body, but he also desires to be present with the Lord. Can you see always that wonderful compensation? Then he takes principle, and he shows that law through principle. Here he shows that through his steadfast unity with principle, that principle will empower him to triumph over every pressure of worldly opinion. And that enables him to work out the right solution in every situation. It's that point where he sees that the world opinion, whatever is going on in the world, just presses on him. And that we can only free ourselves from all personal and worldly opinions by being one and staying steadfast in our unity with principle, because principle always has a solution. Principle always interprets itself to everyone as a solution. So Paul here is standing very faithfully to his principle against all the claims of the counterfeit of principle, all the claims of unbelief, of lawlessness, of darkness. He says, as God's servants, we try to recommend ourselves in all circumstances by our steadfast endurance. You get again that sense to take a stand, to be steadfast in one's unity with the divine principle. And he does that in hardships and in dire straits. When he is flogged, imprisoned, mocked, overworked, sleepless, starving. Nothing just can keep that man away from being steadfast in his unity with principle. Just saying, I don't care what humanly is going to happen with me. But he also rises much higher. He also rises much higher. He is not only faithful when everything around him is dark. He also can be faithful when everything around him just adores him and puts him on a pedestal. That's naturally more difficult. The times when the storms are on are not so difficult as the times when everybody tells to you, oh, Max, you are wonderful, you are doing a wonderful job, and so on, until finally you believe it. Then you are done. You're just done. When everyone is finished. See, flattery is much a greater danger than storms. But he even was faithful in flattery. He said that he is faithful and steadfast by pureness, by knowledge, by long-suffering, by kindness, by the Holy Ghost, by love unfeigned, by the word of truth, by the power of God, by the armor of righteousness on the right hand and on the left. He can say, he doesn't care if the situation is good or evil. He only cares about one thing. Can I stand steadfast with principle? What callest thou me good? Jesus says, there is none good but God. He says that he remains at the standpoint of principle by honor and dishonor, by evil report and even by good report. See, he saw that the human, no matter if it turned evil or good, it's just not the divine. It's just not the Christ Lord. That we have to rise above the human and see that reality is nothing but God and his ideas. That's reality. Mrs. Eddy's textbook explains from beginning to end that the reality of God are ideas, that that's God's realm, that God's universe is peopled with spiritual ideas. Ideas are the only elements of reality. So metaphysics, divine metaphysics, really ask us to rise above always the material and the human, and to atone with the divine, to atone with God and his ideas. So he said, well, this is a wonderful passage, just to give us an impression. He says how he remains steadfast, you see, in his adherence to the Christ, though he was termed deceiver, as deceiver, and yet true. You see, he could see no matter what the world would call him. What mattered for him is what did he have in his inward attitude. He said, we are called deceivers, and yet we are true. It seemed as if we were dying, and behold, we live. You always get those extremes compared. as chastened and not killed, as sorrowful, but we were rejoicing, as sorrowful, yet always rejoicing, as poor, yet making many rich. Paul went around, he had just his tools with him for saddle making. That was all he had. And a few pergaments? No. What they wrote on at that time?
Parchment.
That's all he usually had. And the coat. He was poor, making everyone rich. Making everyone rich at his time and for the following 2,000, 3,000 years. Isn't that richness? Who wouldn't like to have just a few tools and think that he can make mankind for thousands and thousands of years rich? That's what we do. If you are Mary, we can do that. Then we can see that if we can give birth to the idea of science today, Paul had to give birth to the idea of Christianity. Mrs. Eddy gave us the idea of science. The foresight of the holy city is knocking at the door and is impelling our age to accept. If we can be that Mary and give birth to the idea of science, then all generations will call us blessed. What was true with Jesus, what was true once with Paul, is true for us today and to each one. And he had not many mighty. He had the idea. He didn't look if his clients, his students, came from the harbor, drunkards, thieves, robbers, adulterers, whatever they were. If he saw a sparkling of the Christ idea there, he had the mother sense to enlighten that. Well, there is a spark of the Christ in each one of us here, or we wouldn't be here. We would be sunbathing somewhere or making a lot of money in a business or anything like that. We wouldn't be here. So the light has touched us, or we wouldn't be here. Let's be a merry sweet, or the light goes out. Let's tend that light. Then all generations will call us blessed. All generations. Just as Paul, though poor, he was the man who gave out his riches. He had riches and made everyone rich. As having nothing and yet possessing all things. He really possessed those things which really matter. That's why he was rich. Isn't that the way how he says it, a wonderful example for us? Because we all are somehow, in a smaller way, in those difficulties, in those situations. Persecuted on one side, misrepresented on one side, misunderstood on one side, despised on one side. All what matters is what we make out of it. We are not dependent on what the world does with us, what people think about us, what happens in the material and in the human. All what matters is our faithfulness to principle. And that has infinite compensation. In all things ye have approved yourselves to be clear in this matter, he tells the Corinthians. Now, I have to stop. All right. Now, we come to the subject of life. And here he shows how the law of life can triumph over the claim of lack. That if through our sense of unity with life and all what life means, the ideas of life, that life empowers us to triumph over all lack, and it increases our capacity to do good. His subject here is quite tremendous and astonishing. He deals with the fullness of life, the supply of life, and he deals with it in a very scientific way. As an illustration, he takes the church in Jerusalem. At his time, there was a famine in Jerusalem, and so apparently the disciples and the Christians in Jerusalem were in need of all sorts of things. And he, Paul, was making a collection in Macedonia and in Greece and in Ephesus and so on to supply the brethren at headquarters. But it's very metaphysical how he does that. He tries to show that abundance is a fact. You see, the whole subject here, when you read it, teems with terms. Yeah, teems with terms like abundance, riches, that which abounds, bounty, reaping bountifully, exceeding grace, having all sufficiency in all things, of being enriched in everything, and so on. So you can see at once his problem here is to give a true sense of abundance, a true sense of abundance. And he shows them that sense of abundance as an abundance in giving, and not an abundance in receiving or getting. He had a very difficult task to show to those churches that Jerusalem was in need of something, and yet he wanted to educate them into the true sense of abundance. Now, he sees the following thing. He sees that if we have a conscious unity with life and all that life means, then something in us grows and becomes stronger, which is of the nature of life. And you know that life is giving. It's the Father who sends. The Father that is always supporting the child. Father that is always maintaining, providing, supplying the child. So, if we reflect life, and life is giving, then true abundance is giving, not getting. The sense of having life, God life, that is rich and abundant, and thinking that that abundance should come to me so that I get it, is not reflection, but deflection. We deflect an idea which is called fathering, giving. Deflect it and say it is getting. So, what we experience as we go on in metaphysics is this. That the more we study what life is, not only in its word sense, but in the sense that life has a Christ, that life has that urge in itself to express itself, to overflood its universe with all that life has, to give out all that life has, to sustain, to maintain, to supply, to give. Naturally, if our consciousness thinks along that line and is conscious of this, something awakes in us which is of the same nature, not of an opposite nature, of the same nature, which just is always that sense, how can I give? Where do I give? How can I maintain? How can I supply? And he is talking to the Corinthians and to the Philippians, in Philippians, in that way, to strengthen in the Christians the tone of life, that they get a sense of abundance in themselves, an abundance that they feel they are a well of life, a source of abundance, where they feel the only thing they can do is to give and to give. And the second point which one has to see is, so often we like to give, and we just like to help, and just like to father, and we enjoy in it, but we make the mistake and think the other one is poor and he needs it. Well, that's a very poor universe. It's a very poor universe. The moment we begin to give, in the sense that we, even if we like to give and if we just can't help giving, but give because we think the other one hasn't it, we have a poor universe. We have a universe depleted. And we just have a feeling, I have and the other one has not. And we have the haves and the have-nots. Well, that's not metaphysics. That's not the metaphysical and divine attitude. The divine attitude is that there is only one universe, and that's the universe of life. And it's the whole universe. And therefore, we must see that we have a universe of abundance everywhere. Therefore, all that matters is the idea of life. The idea of supplying, of supporting, of strengthening, of maintaining, of providing, of that life-giving, constructive sense. The idea matters. The idea matters. So he sees that each one can win a victory in himself, can win a victory in himself over a sense of lack. Of lack in him and a lack in the other one, can win the victory that there is lack by being consciously conscious of the one fact in being, namely that there is abundant life. Well, if we conceive of that as a universal idea, then that idea gets hold of us. And it gets hold of us in the way that little by little, step by step, we win a victory over a sense of lack within us and a sense of lack without, outside of us. And just get a sense of the infinite provision of life. That's breaking a claim which, under which most people suffer. I think everyone, in some extent, has suffered, is suffering, but it's a claim which has to be overcome, because lack is death. Lack is death. So he shows the way to do it. He shows the way to do it. He shows that the way to do it is to have that conscious, constant unity with that one and only true fact in being, that God is life. Not only that God is life, but also with the fact that that life is fathering the universe.